Hello, this is Tom Allen. The story I'm about to tell you is a scene from the other side of the looking glass. It's about the netherworld of oil politics in Central Asia. So what, you say? Why should I care about Central Asia? Well, Afghanistan is in Central Asia. The Bush administration announced the other day that the U.S. would provide whatever it takes to ensure a stable government there. So what's that got to do with oil? That's what I wondered. There's no oil in Afghanistan. But then why did the oil connection keep coming up on the media fringes? Sounded like a good conspiracy theory to me. I'm always up for a good conspiracy theory. They can be very entertaining. I also thought it might be a chance to catch the Bush administration with a smoking gun. What I found were smoking guns all over the place, not just in the Bush administration. It wouldn't be right to take credit for other people's work, especially the reporters who put their necks on the line reporting from this powder keg while I sit here in my safe office. So here's a look at my sources. A good place to start was oil industry trade journals, and I found pipeline and gas industry to be right on point. Then I dug through my library and dusted off a copy of Anthony Sampson's The Seven Sisters. This book is a history of the oil industry up through 1975 when it was published. And I found a great three-part series published in October 98 in the Washington Post by staff writers Dan Morgan and Dave Ottaway. Later, I was telling a friend about what I was doing, and he said his wife had just finished reading Ahmed Rashid's book, Taliban. I borrowed the book and read the chapters on oil. When I started to put it all together, I had lots of information, but I really didn't know how the pieces fit together. It's a complicated story. It wasn't until I wrote it down and made a couple of edit passes that a really interesting story began to emerge. Stick around. You're going to like this. There is only so much oil in the ground. Sooner or later there won't be much around. Tell that to your kids while you're driving around downtown. That there's only so much oil in the ground. Barrels of ink have been used explaining the environmental reasons for reducing our dependence on barrels of oil, but political reasons may be even more important in the short term. The brush fires and squabbles that have escalated into terrorism have a geopolitical overlay driven by competition for oil and control of pipeline routes. The struggle between Russia, China, and the West for control of Central Asian oil has the potential to make the Desert Storm War pale before the firestorm of scorched earth that could result. In Central Asia, south of the Caucasus, lies a great basin containing the Caspian Sea. This basin is the last known great reserve of oil on the planet. Proven reserves in the area are believed to be about 40 billion barrels of oil, larger than Alaska's North Slope or the North Sea. Estimated reserves are in the hundreds of billions of barrels. Natural gas reserves are believed to be third behind Saudi Arabia and Russia. But the Caspian Basin is landlocked. It is surrounded by unstable and hostile governments consisting of warlords who fight amongst themselves, play off oil companies against each other, and through oil companies, exert excessive influence on American and European foreign policy. Overlaid on top of this is the growing Islamic fundamentalism that impacts the actions of the tribes the West must deal with. A little geography might be in order, since you probably don't have a map and may not be familiar with the area. Clockwise around the Caspian, Russia lies to the north. Kazakhstan lies to the northeast and shares a 4,000-mile border with Russia. Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan lie to the east, Iran to the south, and Azerbaijan to the west. All except Iran are former Soviet republics, and only Iran has international seaports. The current geopolitical situation is easier to understand from an historical perspective. The region has been the subject of intrigue for more than 100 years. In the days of Rockefeller's Standard Oil, it posed a major threat to his vision of world oil monopoly. At the turn of the last century, the emerging multinational oil companies scrambled to gain concessions and control of the area in what Rudyard Kipling, in his book Kim, called the Great Game. Lacking the technology for oil prospecting, the Russian Tsar had allowed foreign interests to prospect for oil in the Caucasus beginning about 1873. The Great Game began when the sons of dynamite inventor Alfred Nobel acquired a concession to drill for oil from the Tsar. The Nobels enlisted the French banking house of Rothschild to aid in financing the development of oil fields in Azerbaijan. Azerbaijan is a mountainous country and the center of the current oil boom. It's been passed back and forth between Russia and Iran for centuries. The Nobels and the Rothschilds grew rich from the oil they exported to Europe, piping it from Baku on the Caspian coast across Azerbaijan to the Black Sea. After much cutthroat competition, they eventually struck a deal with Rockefeller to split the European oil trade. By 1920, the game was up for the Nobel-Rothschild consortium. The Bolshevik Revolution of 1917 had succeeded. Bolshevik revolts in the oil fields prompted the Nobels to approach Rockefeller's Exxon to buy half their interest in Azeri Oil. Despite the political turmoil, Exxon's Walter Teagle bought the Nobels' interest, expecting the Bolshevik Revolution to collapse. The Soviets promptly nationalized Azeri Oil, and Exxon was left holding the bag. Exxon demanded compensation, not understanding that the era of nationalization was upon them. In the chaos that followed, the Soviets cut deals with one after another of the oil companies, promising exclusive deals while secretly selling to others. British Petroleum, Shell, and others began buying Soviet crude on the cheap, undercutting the Rockefeller-Nobel cartel. By the mid-1940s, Hitler's desperate need for oil to prosecute the war was in part responsible for Germany's invasion of Russia in 1941. He had hoped to control the Baku oil fields of Azerbaijan. Hitler failed, of course, and over the next 20 years, the Soviet Union proceeded to drain Azerbaijan's known reserves, leaving behind what one Texas oil man described as the world's biggest junkyard. No excuse for our abuse. No excuse for our abuse. We just assume that what we use will not exceed the hard supply. And soon enough, the world will watch the wells run dry. The Soviets continued to prospect for oil. And in 1979, Soviet geologists discovered an immense but very deep pool of oil 15,000 feet beneath the Kazakh steppe. Geologists called it the 10 G's field and estimated it to be the largest bonanza since Saudi Arabian fields began pumping in 1939. But the Soviets found the oil too deep for their technology. After drilling many fruitless wells, they gave up and put it out to foreign bids. In 1990, after considerable acrimonious negotiation, Chevron signed an agreement with the Soviets, giving it a 50% interest in the 10 Gs. But history has a way of repeating itself. As the deal was being negotiated, the Soviet Union was disintegrating, just as Tsarist Russia had been as Exxon was negotiating with the Nobel brothers. In August of 1991, the government of Kazakhstan laid claim to all the mineral resources in its territory. Chevron, perhaps having learned something from its sister company Exxon's folly of 1920, didn't bet on the resurrection of the Soviet Union, but convinced the new Kazakh president that his best interests lay in an American connection. Recognizing that the U.S. was the only possible counter to Russian and Chinese intervention, he wasn't too hard to convince, and by April 1993, a deal was signed. Chevron got 50% of the 10 G's field as part of a consortium with the state-owned Kazakh oil company. Chevron, with its superior drilling technology, has developed the field, and by mid-1998, it and Mobil were pumping 200,000 barrels a day out of the 10 Gs. Chevron has proven much smarter than Exxon was in 1920. Rather than risk huge amounts of capital in an area of almost guaranteed political instability, Chevron's deal did not oblige it to make the first payment to the Kazakhs until pumping levels reached 250,000 barrels per day. Moving across the Caspian now to Azerbaijan in the 1980s, Soviet geologists found a pool of oil beneath the Caspian they estimated to be about 4.5 billion barrels. This they called the Azerbaijan Sill. Lacking deep water drilling technology, they still had not exploited this find by the time of the Soviet collapse. In 1990, the Azerbaijan State Oil Company began looking for Western oil companies that would be interested in developing this find. Again, after much intrigue, in June 1993, a deal was struck, forming the Azerbaijan International Operating Company, the AIOC. During the 3 years it took to negotiate the deal, Azerbaijan declared its independence from the Soviets, fought a bloody war with Armenia, and suffered an armed insurrection, ousting elected president Abulfez Aykabi and giving Haider Aliyev control. The AOIC now consists of BP Amoco, ExxonMobil, McDermott, Unocal, and Pennzoil, which collectively hold nearly 60%. Lukoil, Russia's largest private oil company, demanded a stake and was cut in at the last minute for 10%. We'll be right back after a short break.
Hello!